He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better.
Geraldo.
77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
You're going to have a deportation force, and you're going to do it humanely, and they're going back where they came. If they came from a certain country, they're going to be brought back to that country. The people that like it more than anybody are the Hispanics that are here legally. There's a radio host in New York who was on the other day. They wrote a story about him. He said, I can't believe it. The Hispanics love Trump because he's talking about his listeners. They came here legally. They went through all of this long process. They came here legally. And he's talking about all of the people that call up. It's a Hispanic station. They love Trump.
They love Trump. I think Trump is smoking peyote. Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, the 12th day of November. Delighted to have you on board, 7 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good morning, Mr. Layden.
Good morning, Mr. Rivera.
A lot going on this morning. Continued fallout. That's Trump talking about the great Fox Business GOP presidential debate. And that was the most enduring headline, Donald Trump's declaration of war against illegal immigrants, expanding that war to include something that I hope from the bottom of my heart chills you to your bones, whatever you think about the undocumented, namely Trump's promise, you just heard it, to establish a deportation force to round up the undocumented immigrants humanely, he says. I say that that Trump's plan is a gift for Hillary Clinton. I think that Trump's plan virtually assures that she will be elected, certainly if Trump is the nominee, but I think that this deportation force, this will damage the GOP brand in ways that I cannot overemphasize. I'm not talking ideology here. I'm not even talking voter turnout. I'm talking simple demographics. That's what I think. I think that this is doom for the Republican Party unless they speak out forcefully, as Jeb Bush and John Kasich have done. I heard Marco Rubio kind of go halfway this morning, but that's his skill, and that's probably why he's surging in the polls. But I'm telling you, if Trump's the nominee or if Trump's plan, this notion of a deportation force, can you imagine what that's going to look like? Do you know any undocumented immigrants? Can you see the deportation force coming to an apartment block near yours? Knock, knock. Let me see your papers. Okay, you, come on with me. But that's my mommy. Come on, you got to come. What about you, 8-year-old? No, I was born here. Okay, you stay. How about you, auntie? No, I was born in Mexico. You come. Come on. The deportation, I'm humanely deporting you. Can you imagine? I want to talk about that, and I'd love to hear what you have to say at 866-Geraldo. There's also an expansion of the fight against ISIS in Syria and Iraq. I want to talk about that. The Kurds finally on the road. Can you imagine if we had a real Arab force to go against ISIS? Where the hell is the United States of America? I mean, I agree with Trump. If Russia wants to pound the hell out of ISIS, let them. But my goodness, we can't let the Kurds fight alone. I appreciate that it is our bombers, our fighter bombers, that are paving the way. But I want more. I want stronger, bigger, badder against ISIS in Syria and Iraq. If you want to talk about that, I will. I also want to talk about the Daily News did a great job on it. This salary recommendations, the outrageous salary recommendations for the New York City Council. I don't know how much you make, but what would you pay members of that august body? And what do they do exactly, the City Council of the great city of New York? Do they do enough to earn $192,500 a year? $192,500 a year. That happens to be $20,000 more than the governor of New York makes. The governor makes $179,000. The City Council of New York wants to make $192,500. Is that even a full-time job? Noam, is that a full-time job?
You know, I'm not sure. I have to check. I think you can have
another
job. Do you
have a cover City Hall?
I'm gonna look.
Check that out. I mean, $192,500 a year. The average cop, after 5 years, makes $76,602. That's before overtime, but that's the base. $76,602. That's the cop after 5 years. So you're talking $192,500 a year. I mean, is that justified? Let me know. I mean, if you know what they do, and if you think what they do, I think there's, like 40 of them, aren't there? 40 or high 30s anyway. Find out how, would you know, also find out how many there are?
Sure.
$192,500 a year. We'll bring that up at the start of the next segment. But I want to start this morning in Chicago. This has distressed me to my core in a way that it is hard to overstate. The other morning, they laid to rest the 9-year-old we've been talking about, Tishon Lee, the kid that was lured into the alleyway to be assassinated, to send a message to his gangbanger dad from the rival gang. I mean, one is the gangster disciples, the other is the Blackstone Nation, these street gangs that have a war over who gets to deal drugs on a particular block. I mean, this is a message that resonates from Newark to New York. So they buried the kid. They buried the 9-year-old. Here, and I want you to listen to this man, Michael Flager. Father Michael Flager, the reverend, the local reverend, delivered the eulogy for the 9-year-old. This message must resonate. It must resonate from the Windy City. Let it be heard in the alleyways and the streets of Newark and Brooklyn and the Bronx and every urban neighborhood in this country. Listen to Father Michael Flager.
My son was on his way to play basketball at the park down the street from his grandmother's house. Our children have a right to walk our streets. Our children have a right to play in the park. Our children have a right to sit on their porch. Our children have a right to expect to be safe wherever they are in the city of Chicago. Our children deserve that. Tassan was not in the wrong place. The murderer, the executioner, the assassin, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Tyson was doing what every child has a right to do, be a child.
Amen. Tyson was shot multiple times. It was not a one-shot deal, certainly not an accident. It was an ambush. He was shot multiple times in the face and the back. And he was just laid to rest on Tuesday at St. Sabina Church in Chicago. His body, you should know, got to the church in a small casket, a casket made for this fourth grader. I have a fourth grader. Lots of people have fourth graders. A fourth grader assassinated. Here's more from Father Flager.
Tyson, step on the new court that's been prepared for you. It's not the court of Dawes Park, but it's the court that's been paved in gold. And hear the cheers of all the fans standing up in ovation, shouting and clapping for you, Tyson. It's called the cloud of witnesses. And Tyson, when you get there, give a high five to the team that's standing on the court waiting for you. Shooting guard, Jordan Davis. Small forward, Tamir Rice. Power forward, Trayvon Martin. Center, Blair Hope. Point guard, Michael Brown. And look, there's Terrell Bozzi playing the drums. And listen, there's Hadia Pendleton, Rakia Boyd, and the four little girls of Birmingham. They're cheerleading for you, Tyson. And look over there. There's the coach. Look at the coach. Emmett Till is waving you on the court. Yeah, Tyson, step up in the court. Play ball, play ball, play ball. This ain't the end. We'll see you in the playoffs.
Doesn't his life matter? You have racially charged unrest spreading from the University of Missouri now to at least two more campuses, Ithaca in upstate New York, Yale in Connecticut. Isn't it fair to say, as I've been saying for years on this program, that the urban community is focused on the wrong thing? That these activists are focused on the wrong thing? On the lesser of the evils that plague us? Isn't it true that the civil rights crusade of our age should be the end of the violent, drug-driven civil war that is gutting the ghetto? Isn't that fair? Where's the president? Where is our national urgency? We want to create a deportation force to round up the law-abiding when our native-born population is killing itself, committing a kind of urban suicide? Where are our priorities? What's happened to us that we've so lost a moral compass that this kind of violence can be perpetrated against our children? And why? To send a message? To get rights to deal drugs on a corner? Where are our priorities? Why don't we talk about this? Why is it only here we talk about that? This year alone, welcome back, everybody. This year alone, more than 390 people in Chicago have been killed. 390 in Chicago. I don't have the latest statistics. Maybe Noam can, you can find it for me. I have as of September 21st in New York, it was 239. So New York is a city almost three times larger than Chicago. And we've had 100 fewer, at least 100 fewer or more, fewer murders. 390 people killed in Chicago. And all Trump talks about, the only crime he talks about, is Kate, God bless her, the innocent, lovely lady killed in Chicago by the undocumented immigrant, the illegal immigrant who kept coming back and back despite being imprisoned for illegal reentry, and he killed Kate. That's the only crime Republicans are talking about, that one murder in San Francisco. Here you have 390 people killed this year so far in the nation's third largest city. 390 killed, and not one word about this. How is that? How is that? You know why it is? Because this is a problem that is difficult to solve. This is a problem that needs a massive reordering of our priorities. This really has to be attention. It's so much easier to blame those people coming in from outside, bringing their problems, bringing their violence. We'll round them up. We'll throw them out. And here you have 390 people killed in Chicago. Over 250 in New York, up a bit. But I'm telling you, folks, it's like so stupid. It's stupid. In Bushwick, okay, what are you thinking? Thank you for your calls. Full board, 866-HERALDO. What's on your mind? Victor, okay. In Bushwick.
I got a way to solve the immigrant problem with the 11 Good. Million people. Let Good. Them all stay here. No fines, no nothing, but they can never, ever vote in a national, state, or local election. Their kids that are born here, fine. Okay, plus that. They commit one felony, they're gone. Three misdemeanors, they're gone. They got to be here 5 years before they start to collect anything off the government's back. That makes everybody happy. They can't vote, so the Republicans can't complain. It's a Democratic plot to get more voters. You get more workers, and everybody's happy.
All right, Victor, you know what I appreciate? I appreciate that that is a smart and sincere effort at a solution.
Do you
Not
like
that
it?
I agree with you, but what I like is you're thinking in a positive way. You're thinking, how do we fix this? I like that, and I appreciate you calling. Brian in Ridgewood, what are you thinking about, buddy?
Geraldo, I have two comments. One, I'd like to tie together the immigration problem to the murder rate in Chicago.
Or the first, other 10 cities, Camden and East St. Okay. Louis and Baltimore,
yeah,
and so forth.
Perfect. My first comment is the $15 minimum wage. There's so many different forces at work with illegal immigration, and this one will make those illegal immigrants more attractive to employers who will be more and more willing to pay cash.
Interesting point. Interesting point. Fair point.
For them. Now, I want to, for this idea of...
Well, hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second. No, that is an interesting point, isn't it? That raising the minimum wage, which I support, will make undocumented immigrants more attractive to employers because they'll get less than the $15 minimum.
Right. So another reason to what? To get rid of them or keep them there?
Whatever the reason, I think that what I'm looking for here are honest observations and suggestions, and I think that that is an honest point that even I, who is in favor of compassion and inclusion and legalization of these folks, have to note that Brian's probably right. Go ahead, Brian.
All right. Near my home in suburban New York City, off the top of my head, I can think of 10 places where what I assume to be illegal immigrants congregate and look for work for the day. 20, 30, 50 of them in some cases. In many of these locations, they're in urban centers, and I don't see any of the black kids there, for lack of a better term, looking for that same day labor pay.
Right, and true.
I believe that part of that is because so many of them are on so much government assistance that many of them have lost their desire to work. So my thought would be if there would be some way to create a place for these kids to go in the inner city that are looking for work, and if a landscaper or mason or roofer goes down there and gets those kids, the government will subsidize that some of that pay. So, for example, if a guy's going into Patterson, picking up 3 or 4 day laborers, paying them $12 an hour plus lunch, instead he goes to a government center, picks up these inner city black kids, he pays them $7.50, the government pays them $7.50, these kids get a job, and at least then we're pointing in the right direction.
I love it. I love it. I think it's another great idea, and it's an example. Both, Brian, I appreciate that. The last two callers, examples of positive, not that I agree with them necessarily. Some things I do, some things I don't. But this is what I'm talking about. This is what a debate over immigration and urban violence, that's what it should be. Not talking about a deportation force to go door to door. I mean, that's ridiculous. Think about things to make the country a better place.
A lot of people are saying Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton might be too old to be president. And it's true. I mean, Bernie Sanders is so old.
How old is he?
He needs 12 Viagras to go up in the polls.
You know what I'm saying?
Hillary Clinton, I mean, she's no spring chicken either. She's old.
How old is she?
She's so old, her first pantsuit was made by Betsy Ross.
And
she bought it at Ann Taylor Cave.
Boy, that Bernie Sanders sure is old. He's so old, he thinks a trickle-down theory is about him urinating. This has got to stop! He's so old, he remembers when Old Dirty Bastard was just Dirty Bastard. And Hillary's so old, when she hears 2016, she yells, bingo! She's so old, she remembers when Jimmy Fallon had hands.
And Hillary's so old, she's not running for president, she's mall-walking for it. Where's the Panda Express?
Where's the place where I can get a house key made?
Where's the artist Julius?
And Bernie Sanders is so old.
Oh, how old is he?
He tucks his testicles into his socks. Which, believe me, is not such a bad thing.
There you go. Billy Crystal, ladies and gentlemen.
Billy Crystal and Jimmy Fallon talking about the demographics. That's pretty funny stuff, though.
Very funny.
So have you been following? I want to get back to our callers momentarily. I just want to mention something I have not mentioned. Incidentally, Spike Lee just was on CNN calling Chicago and the violence in Chicago, the 390 murders, the canary in the coal mine. I'm telling you, this is like crazy what's going on out there. And the fact that it's talked about so little. I mean, I don't know what people are afraid to talk about it. I don't know. But, you know, going from the violence in the Chicago and Newark and New York inner cities to North Salem in Westchester County, the beautiful place, horse country, a hilltop, estate. Have you covered this murder of the 83-year-old lady?
Yeah.
Lois Coley, what do you know?
Well, you know, bucolic neighborhood, North Salem, and a wealthy one at that. So, of course, the first thing you hear about this 83-year-old socialite's murder is nothing like this ever happens here. She's on this 300-acre farm. Her husband is a franchisee, McDonald's franchise, a franchise guy. He owns a lot of McDonald's all across the country, so they're very wealthy. And she's found Monday morning in the laundry room of this $25 million estate, likely killed with a fire extinguisher. There's no forced entry into this home.
She was beaten to death?
Well, they wouldn't go as far as saying that, but it sure looks like that's they were looking for this fire hydrant big time, or this fire extinguisher big time, 2 days ago. And they were even letting people know that's what they were looking for. Maybe whoever was involved in this crime had dumped it on somebody's front lawn or the woods somewhere. So it sounds like that's what the item was used, because they said she was bludgeoned to death. That much they would tell us. So I can assume that it might have been this fire extinguisher. So they don't know what happened. No forced entry. There's one thought, and they're not even ready to connect the dots. There had been three robberies close by in Connecticut, house robberies. And so there was a thought maybe she happened to walk in on somebody robbing her home in the laundry room. But
that makes sense. But was anything taken? Did they rob
nothing
her?
That's the thing, is there's nothing missing from this house.
Are there any, I hate to say this, any like estate issues, you know, like kids, relatives, well, others, greedy.
You know, we haven't heard that.
Inside stuff?
We know over the last 24 hours they have been interviewing current employees of this family, ex-employees of this family. They've ruled out the husband. They said he's not a suspect in this case. So right now it's a mystery to us. I mean, it could be police no more, and they're just not letting on, but they're giving us very few details.
So a fox hunter, fabulously wealthy, found bludgeoned to death in a very upscale suburb in Westchester, just the heart of you know, the swells neighborhood. And see, it can happen anywhere, but I'm mystified by it. I'm curious about it. But let me go back to where I've been. And I really feel strong. First of all, how many city council? I mean, you were going to find out some stuff.
51 city council members.
51 of them.
Yeah,
51.
There's 51. And you can hold as many outside jobs as you want to. There's no hard, fast rule. In fact, many of them, of course, have law practices on the outside. You know, some people treat it as a full-time job, like any city council. But this one, you can hold outside jobs, which, of course, so not only would you potentially be making that salary of $190,000-some-odd, but you can imagine if you're a lawyer and you're out as a city council member, what kind of work you could steer in your direction as a city council member.
That's like crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So you could potentially make a lot of money.
What do you do? And the thing is, when you check out what they make in Washington, this is where I think Cruz and Rubio and the Republicans are really on to something. There's nobody that gets less than six figures in Washington, D.C. That's why you have all these great suburbs. They're all government workers. I mean, they complain about Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico, everybody works for the government. Everybody works for the government here. I mean, Washington keeps getting bigger and bigger. They can't even name the agencies they want to cut out, these guys. That was the funniest thing about Ted Cruz. The guy's usually so sharp, brilliant. He was like had a Rick Perry moment. He couldn't remember what agencies he was going to cut out. But they're all making six figures. And here, $192,500 for the 51 city council members. 51 of them. I mean, okay. All right, so we're all over the place. I just want, on the note about what government does, somebody sent a very nasty email. I'll cut out all the expletives. But the one point that somebody made about Marco Rubio during the highly regarded Fox Business debate the other night was, you know, remember when Trump looked dismissively, Noam, at John Kasich, and he said, Trump said, I've created a beautiful business making billions and billions of dollars. I don't have to listen to this guy.
Right.
Referring to John Kasich. At least John Kasich, though, has had some jobs. I mean, he's worked on the private sector and banking and so forth, aside from being the governor of Ohio and, you know, the budget director on the House Budget Committee, or the chairman of the House Budget Committee. Kasich's done some stuff. What has Marco Rubio ever done? He's never had a job. I mean, it's very interesting. But while studying law, Rubio interned for Ileana Ross-Leighton, the Miami area congresswoman. Then he worked on Republican Senator Bob Dole's 1996 presidential campaign. And then 2 years out of law school at 26 years old, he was elected to the city commissioner of West Miami. Then he moved on to the Florida House of Representatives. The guy's never had a job. Marco Rubio has never worked in the private sector. I to me, that is astonishing when you think about, you know, what, how Republicans talk constantly about government is bad or big government is bad. It's all about the private sector. We've got to unleash the capitalist juices of people. And then you have a guy like Marco Rubio, who's all charismatic. Everybody's in love with the dude right now. And he's never had a job. Never, ever, ever had a job. Interesting. Okay, here's a call from Beacon. Maybe it's about that other thing. Here's Steve in Beacon. What's up, Steve?
Hey, good morning, Geraldo.
So what's on your mind, buddy?
Okay, I was mentioning to the screener that, you know, during FDR's first term, you know, FDR, the greatest president in Democratic mind, in his first term, due to the Depression, he actually signed the Mexican Repatriation Act that deported almost 5 million Mexicans at the time.
I have to look that up. If I knew that, I had forgotten it, but I will look. I did check out Operation Wetback.
Well,
and found, to my dismay, how violent and absolutely inappropriate it was. But go ahead,
Well,
Steve.
They tied the Marijuana Stamp Act to that legislation at the same time because they believed the Mexicans were the general users of and growers of marijuana along the southern border.
Oh, really? I remember that reefer madness, the whole anti-marijuana sentiment in this country was basically a race-based reaction to the greasers, as many of us Latinos were called in those days, and thought that marijuana was something that Latinos were, you know, institutionally prone to indulge in. But go ahead.
And everybody characterized these situations as straw men, but you know, at the time, you know, FDR saw that it was a need to you know, save jobs along the border. And
so, Steve, is your position that if it's good for FDR, it should be good for whoever is the next president?
Well, you know what? That's what, you know, the thing is, I'm talking about the how hypocritical people are that they'll throw him up on a, you know.
Well, you probably have a point there, buddy.
And, you know,
you probably have a point there.
President, but, you know,
let me say something more generally. Let me say something more generally. And, Steve, you're another example of it. I think we have the smartest audience in the radio universe now. I do. These people are so thoughtful. They read, they formulate opinions, and even though I may disagree with them, they are music to my ears in many ways.
Yeah, well, this morning's actually been incredible. Some really creative ideas.
It's like college.
Yeah, I kind of like it. And then I go home and I steal them and I use them as my own.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. Trying to get your calls momentarily, 866-Geraldo. I appreciate them. So I found out what the city council does. It monitors performance of city agencies, makes land use decisions, and legislates on a variety of issues. The city council has sole responsibility for approving the city budget, and there are 48 Democrats and 3 Republicans. The speaker, Melissa Mark Viverito, as you know. So they want $192,500 a year. That's a raise, incidentally, from the current $112,500. So they want a $70,000 raise. Cops got a 1% raise.
Right. Yeah. They're fighting for a 1% raise. I mean, it's not even a done deal yet. Yeah. They're fighting for more, obviously. But yeah.
So I just or who would you rather call? This? I mean, you got a beef on your street, or you're worried about something, or say, but you want to call the city council, or you're going to call the cops. You're going to call 911 or you're going to call 311? I don't think that's even a close call.
I'd give them a little bit of cover, not that they should
all
get
right,
a raise.
Go ahead.
But let me give you a little bit of
side.
Cover because
I'm open-minded.
I have a good friend, city council, and it's a 24-hour-a-day job. It is. I mean, the phone is constantly ringing with people calling with problems in their neighborhood because you have 51 members, very specific neighborhoods, and you become sort of like a pothole maven. I mean, it's like fixing small-time things in those neighborhoods, and if you're good at it, that's why you keep getting reelected because you get things done for people in that neighborhood. If you're a good city council member, people will remember you and they'll go in and vote for you. Now, what the worth of that is, I don't know, but it is more than a part-time job. Even though they call it that, it really is a full-time job.
All right. I want people out there listening right now, if you have had a city council member do something good for you, call me. I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear what we're paying that kind of money for. I'd be delighted. But that's not our main topic. Our main topic is we have skewed priorities here. We have the leading presidential candidate for the Republican nomination, Donald Trump. I think he is the probable nominee. And he's declared war, essentially, on the undocumented immigrants. Now he wants a deportation force. And the immigrants that he's complaining about, you know, and the violent crime, like he said, the immigrants are responsible for the outbreak of all these murders in Baltimore. There virtually are no undocumented immigrants in Baltimore. I think that he's totally wrong about that. And again, I say the cities, check out the cities that are the 10 most deadly cities. Like Newark, like Camden, like Baltimore, like East St. Louis, like New Orleans, like Detroit. These are not places where undocumented immigrants are flocking to in any kind of numbers. That's not the problem that plagues us. The problem that plagues us is this horrible civil war that's going on. Well, a lot of it drug-driven, drug turf-driven, a lot of it driven by the fact that there are guns everywhere. But it is absolute nuts and deserves a lot more attention than it gets. All right, in Queens, Elena is on the line. Hi, Elena. Did I say it right?
Elna. Oh,
Elna, I'm sorry. No E. Okay.
Elna.
Elna. Hi, Elna.
Hi.
Welcome.
How are you, Geraldo?
Good, good. Thank you for calling.
Okay, listen to me. I'm the mother of the soldier that did four tours in Afghanistan. I sent you a letter. I don't know if you got it, which I wrote to President Obama.
I don't remember seeing it.
And
Elna,
I send you all the articles.
Tell me what the message is.
Oh, the message.
And if I lose you, call back after the news break.
Okay, listen to me, please.
Go ahead.
No, who is Ted Cruz?
Ted Cruz is the senator from Texas.
No, I know that, but he's a Canadian citizen. How can he run for president of the United States? I'm very aggravated about that.
Oh, the fact that he's Canadian.
Right.
Well,
I'm told that nobody who was
nobody
not born,
born outside the country can be president. But Alan Dershowitz, who is no particular friend of Ted Cruz, although he taught him at Harvard, says that if you're born to Americans, regardless of where you're born, you're a citizen if you elect
to be American born. So everybody whose mother is a citizen is an American automatically.
Thanks for your son's service.
The only thing you got me locked out from is my guitar. And whoever got my guitar and whoever's taking my guitar and whoever's keeping my guitar, I swear to God, there'll be nothing left over that. Because I've earned that guitar two times up over your head, Chop Chop. And if they don't let me have my rights...
What?
My rights, man!
What will you do?
What would I do? Put the Holy Spirit on them. In your case, it would be the unholy spirit. In other words, you think an unholy, but Abraxas.
No, you know what I think? I think that you are an evil person.
Right, I'm evil. I'm terrible.
You are, Charlie.
Oh, yeah, I'm awful. I'm awful.
You're a murdering dog, Charlie.
Oh, I'm a terrible dog. I'm a fiend.
You're a mass murdering dog.
A mass murdering dog.
Charlie Manson, my historic confrontation with him at San Quentin Penitentiary in California some years ago. He's 81 today. You know, I put that interview... No, I'm on Geraldo.com, my website. It has over 3 million hits.
Wow.
Why are people so fascinated with that guy?
What do you think about that interview all these years later? Because he didn't, you know, I watched it. I'm one of the 3 million that watched it. And, you know, you had that little battle there, and that's kind of the way the interview goes. I mean, you didn't, you know, it's interesting to see what he says, but are we, you know, we give him free publicity for other people to sort of fall under his spell? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I think that if you fall under the spell of Charlie Manson, you've got real problems.
Well, that's true.
I think that what is curious to me, but now that you mentioned that aspect of it, is why are people so fascinated with him? What is he? I mean, he didn't, as far as we know, personally kill people. I think that what is fascinating is how he got upper middle class, college educated young people to follow him to the extent that they would commit barbaric murder at his orders, on his command, do things that were so savage and uncivilized, so Hitlerian. I don't know. I still to this day can't define what it is about Charles Manson that is so enduring that every generation he gets rediscovered in.
Yeah.
It's really amazing. But he continues, thankfully, to rot on death row. He's not on death row. He's because the death penalty was declared unconstitutional that year, 72. Everybody was in the class of he was convicted in. I got to look it up. But anyway, the death penalty was declared unconstitutional, so he's serving life without the possibility of parole. But that's Charles Manson, 81 years old today. Jeb Bush wasn't asked if he would. Remember, he was asked if he would kill baby Hitler.
Right.
She asked him to kill baby Charles Manson. Okay, so much going on. In a few minutes, the President of the United States will be convening a special. He's entering right now. The President is coming in. He's going to be awarding the Medal of Honor for conspicuous gallantry to Captain Florent Groberg of the United States Army, who's with the 4th Infantry Brigade in Afghanistan. So the President has entered. Captain
Almighty
Groberg
God,
will be the 10th living recipient.
We hear your words in the psalmist. How can we repay the Lord for his goodness to me? Today, we remember your goodness and the sacrifice of all our soldiers. Heal our hearts from the tears of their grieving families. Be with us as we honor the actions of our heroes. We give thanks for their sacred calling to serve, to protect, to defend our nation and our way of life without counting the costs. May this heroic and virtuous soldier be an example for future generations. May his life serve as a beacon for our young men and women who run to the sound of the guns for the sake of humanity, for the sake of the nation they have come to love. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Now, the President of the United States will be awarding the medal
to Good morning and welcome to the
Captain
White House.
Herberg. Here he is, the President.
A little more than 3 years ago, as Captain Florent Groberg was recovering from his wounds as a consequence of the actions that we honor today, he woke up on a hospital bed in a little bit of a haze. He wasn't sure, but he thought he was in Germany. And someone was at his bedside talking to him. And he thought it was the lead singer from the heavy metal band Korn. Flo thought, "What's going on? Am I hallucinating?" But he wasn't. It was all real. And so today, Flo, I want to assure you, you are not hallucinating. You are actually in the White House. Those cameras are on. I am not the lead singer from Korn. We are here to award you our nation's highest military honor, the Medal of Honor. Now, Flo and I have actually met before. 3 years ago, I was on one of my regular visits to Walter Reed to spend some time with our wounded warriors, and Flo was one of them. We talked. Turns out he liked the Chicago Bears, so I liked him right away. And I had a chance to meet his parents, who could not be more gracious and charming, and you get a sense of where Flo gets his character from. It is wonderful to see both of you again.
This is the President of the United States. You're listening live as he awards the Congressional Medal of Honor for conspicuous gallantry to Captain Flo Groberg. Let's listen.
So there's some honey-do lists going on. His many friends, fellow soldiers, and family, all of our distinguished guests. A day after Veterans Day, we honor this American veteran whose story, like so many of our vets and wounded warriors, speaks not only of gallantry on the battlefield, but resilience here at home. As a teenager, just up the road in Bethesda, Flo discovered he had an incredible gift. He could run fast. Half mile, mile, 2 mile, he'd leave his competition in the dust. He was among the best in the state, and he went on to run track and cross country at the University of Maryland. Flo's college coach called him the consummate teammate. As good as he was in individual events, somehow he always found a little extra something when he was running on a relay with a team. Distance running is really all about guts, and as one teammate
said, this is the President of the United States, Barack Obama,
than everyone else
awarding Captain Florent Groberg, Flo Groberg, from Bethesda, Maryland, the Medal of Honor for Conspicuous Gallantry. And this is because I think this will run for a while. Let me give you the abbreviated version. This is for Captain Flober, the President and I both flubbing the name. Captain Florent Groberg was with the Personal Security Detachment Commander for Task Force Mountain Warrior with the 4th Infantry's Brigade Combat Team during combat operations. And what he did was throw himself on a grenade, take the shot that killed some of his colleagues. But to commemorate his selfless service, today he becomes the 10th living recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor for actions in Afghanistan. And we are deeply grateful, Captain Flo Groberg, for your service and for your conspicuous gallantry. God bless you. All right, so what's on your mind? We have so many things that we've been talking about today, and we've had kind of a wild ride. Let me, after thanking you for your patience, go to Kevin in New York and 866 or other. What's on your mind, Kev? Hello, Kevin, you there?
Yeah.
I think Kevin's monitoring the Medal of Honor ceremony. He is in Forest Hills. He is Michael. What's up, Michael?
Yeah, congratulations for your show. Great show. One thing I got to say, we're going to
tackle the suicide bomber. Hold on.
Deporting all the illegals from New York.
Tackle.
Specifically from New York and from East Coast. Donald Trump is 100% right. That's it. Good luck, Geraldo. Take care, baby.
Wait. I missed what you said, Michael. You say Donald Trump.
Love you.
Okay. I love you, too. I'm sorry. I missed what you said. You get the... Well, let's listen to the president. I want to make sure that we know exactly this tackling of the suicide
bomber. He grabbed the bomber by his vest and kept pushing him away. And all those years of training on the track, in the classroom, out in the field, all of it came together in those few seconds. He had the instincts and the courage to do what was needed. One of Flo's comrades, Sergeant Andrew Mahoney, had joined in too. And together they shoved the bomber again and again. And they pushed him so hard he fell to the ground onto his chest, and then the bomb detonated. Ball bearings, debris, dust exploded everywhere. Flo was thrown some 15 or 20 feet and was knocked unconscious. And moments later, he woke up in the middle of the road in shock. His eardrum was blown out. His leg was broken and bleeding badly. Still, he realized that if the enemy launched a secondary attack, he'd be a sitting duck. When a comrade found him in the smoke, Flo had his pistol out, dragging his wounded body from the road. That blast by the bridge claimed 4 American heroes. 4 heroes Flo wants us to remember today. One of his mentors, a 24-year Army vet who always found time for Flo and any other soldier who wanted to talk, Command Sergeant Major Kevin Griffin. A West Pointer who loved hockey and became a role model to cadets and troops because he always cared more about other people than himself, Major Tom Kennedy. A popular Air Force leader known for smiling with his whole face, someone who always seemed to run into a friend wherever he went, Major David Gray. And finally, a USAID Foreign Service officer who had just volunteered for a second tour in Afghanistan. A man who moved to the United States from Egypt and reveled in everything American, whether it was Disneyland or chain restaurants or roadside pie, Ray Guy Abdel Fattah. These four men believed in America. They dedicated their lives to our country. They died serving it. Their families, loving wives and children, parents and siblings, bear that sacrifice most of all. So while Ray Guy's family could not be with us today, I'd ask three Gold Star families to please stand and accept our deepest thanks.
Captain Groberg, as I said, only the 10th living service member to receive the Medal of Honor for actions in Afghanistan or Iraq. Seven others have posthumously been awarded the medal. Captain Groberg, born in France, interestingly enough, became a naturalized citizen, an immigrant, in 2001, the same year he graduated high school in Maryland, going on to star in track and field at the University of Maryland. We have to take a quick intermission. We'll be right back.
Two command sergeants major and an Afghanistan National Army Brigade commander. As they approached the provincial governor's compound, Captain Groberg observed an individual walking close to the formation. While the individual made an abrupt turn towards the formation, he noticed an abnormal bulge underneath the individual's clothing. Selflessly placing himself in front of one of the brigade commanders, Captain Groberg rushed forward, using his body to push the suspect away from the formation. Simultaneously, he ordered another member of the security detail to assist with removing the suspect. At this time, Captain Groberg confirmed the bulge was a suicide vest, and with complete disregard for his life, Captain Groberg again, with the assistance of the other member of the security detail, physically pushed the suicide bomber away from the formation. Upon falling, the suicide bomber detonated his explosive vest outside of the perimeter of the formation, killing four members of the formation and wounding numerous others. The blast from the first suicide bomb caused the suicide vest of a previously unnoticed second suicide bomber to detonate prematurely with minimal impact on the formation. Captain Groberg's immediate actions to push the first suicide bomber away from the formation significantly minimized the impact of the coordinated suicide bomber's attack on the formation, saving the lives of his comrades and several senior leaders. Captain Groberg's extraordinary heroism and selflessness above and beyond the call of duty at the risk of his life are in keeping with the highest traditions of the military service and reflect great credit upon himself, 4th Infantry Brigade Combat Team, 4th Infantry Division, and the United States Army.
They are about to place the Medal of Honor on the neck of Captain Groberg. The President of the United States now is attaching the famous blue ribbon. Captain Groberg now wears proudly the most important military distinction of the United States. Army. Thank you, Captain Groberg, for your service. Let me go from Washington, D.C. An interesting article out of Chicago by a guy named E.W. Jackson. He talks about how the moderators in the presidential debate just concluded did not even mention the fact that black un-Americans have an unemployment rate 12% more than twice the average. They have an underemployment rate 20. They have an unemployment rate of 12%. That's twice the national average. An underemployment rate of 20.5%. The average white family earns $50,400. The average black family earns $32,000. So, and it's down. They've lost. Black families have lost income since President Obama has taken office. And Hispanics also lag behind the rest of the country. And the question is, why is there no discussion at a national level by either party of this situation, this nationwide problem, the economic depression in the inner cities, and the crime and violence that plagues them? I'm telling you, that's where the emphasis should be. And the only reason it's not there is because it's too tough. It's too tough. What do? You're not going to declare war on poverty the way they had in the 1960s. You're not going to throw money at it. There's no way the Congress of the United States, as it's currently formulated, will ever go back to those days where you throw money at these social problems. What the hell you do? What do? You got to deal with it. You really have to deal with this inner city violence. And there is undoubtedly a relationship between that violence and the anemic employment situation in those areas. Kevin in New York, what's on your mind? Thank you for calling 866.
Yeah, Geraldo, thank you very much. 2 points, if I may, please. It isn't hard at all. There was a direct correlation, Geraldo, between the black unemployment rate in this country, especially black men, and the use of cheap illegal labor. That was discussed by Barbara Jordan, I believe, years ago. That is obvious. And I think Trump is going to do well with the black community because of it. And in your opening remarks,
I wonder. It's not indicated. Maybe you're right. Maybe it will play out that way.
Well,
as
you know,
the surveys I see right now, it's not.
The same way the Democrats just took away charter schools that the Republicans gave black children. I think blacks are starting to wake up, Geraldo, to the fact that, like Malcolm said, the Democrats treat blacks like chumps. And I think a lot of them are starting to wake up. But I wanted to say also,
Kevin, can you call back after the news break? I don't want to lose you. You sound like a very bright person. I like what you're saying. So can you call us back or just hold on? Welcome back, everybody. I just want to give you a heads up. I think that it is intriguing and very important for all of us in the year between now and the November 2016 presidential election to talk about what the caller Kevin brought up. That is the possibility or the existence, the reality of tension between inner city people, mainly African-American, and undocumented immigrants, either from Asia or more commonly in this area from Latin America, principally Mexico. You know, is there tension, and will that tension result in a larger than usual turnout for the black vote for a Republican opposed to undocumented immigration, as opposed to a Democrat like Hillary Clinton, who'd be much more welcoming, let me say. But I think that it is an intriguing question, and I think we should, in fairness, as we discuss, because you know my position on the undocumented, I think in fairness we should examine that going forward. But now, permit me, we're going to go from the hardcore political issues to something a bit more cultural. I want to tell you about a very important charity, a wonderful nonprofit that helps inner city young people get involved in music and theater and other things. But before I do, you know how proud I am of my five children. My baby, my doll, my 10-year-old soul has taken up the piano. It really is resonating very warmly in our house. I'd like to play, before we speak to the aforementioned Sol Rivera, I would like to play you a bit from her recent concert at home, where one of our other notable family members voices his review of Sol's performance. Here it is.
Who's that, Yoko? That's
Ricky, the music critic.
I thought maybe Yoko Ono was over your house.
So without further ado, let me bring on the star of the show, not Ricky, but my beautiful daughter, Sol. And honey, I think the dog really likes your piano playing. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Daddy. How are you?
I'm good. Are you in school? Did you have terrace time?
I am in school, and yes, I did have terrace time. What are you doing today?
Well, I'm on the radio right now, and so are you. So tell me about Tada. Tell me why is Tada important? What does Tada do, honey?
Tada is a theater, a school, and a company that brings theater programs to kids in schools that don't have them. They also have scholarships and free programs for all different types of kids.
Wow, it sounds great. Now, you've been in Tada performances too, haven't you?
I have. My favorite show was Princess Fui, and I liked the classes.
Princess Fui, you liked the classes? And tell me about the kids that go to Tada. Where are they from?
Well, they're from all over New York City. Bronx, Queens, Manhattan, Staten Island, New Jersey, Brooklyn, all over.
And so what do they do when they get there?
They act and they sing. It's kind of like an off-Broadway stage for kids.
So tell me about the dance-a-thon on this off-Broadway stage. What is the dance-a-thon? Are you going to be in the dance-a-thon?
Dance-a-thon is a dance party for kids on November 21st to support Kid-Off Theater. We have to dance for 3 hours.
3 hours? You're going to dance for 3 hours in a row?
Yes.
And so how does that raise money for the charity?
Well, to keep it fair, I just need the most donors. So if everyone listening just gave me a dollar, I could win a prize. If you want to sponsor me, look for Dance-a-thon at kidofftheater.com. Then look for my picture.
Sounds like a professional pitch girl.
It does.
I participate every year with my friends and meet new kids, too. I've seen you raise money on TV and know how much it helps people, so I like to do it, too. And no grown-ups are invited to this.
No grown-ups are invited?
Yes, but there are lots of Kid-Off chaperones.
Oh, okay, that's good. So, Amy Fiore from Tada, hi. So you heard your supporter there. Give us a little more on how this fundraiser is going to work.
Bye,
hello,
bye,
Amy.
Go.
Okay, sweetie, bye-bye. Love you.
I love you, too.
All right, Amy. Hi, Amy Fiore of Tada. Thank you, honey. Bye. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Geraldo. So as Sol said, this is a fundraiser that we do every year. We believe in our mission is to make musical theater accessible and affordable for every family and child in New York City that's interested in participating. And we figure that the best fundraisers that we have are kids themselves, because we figure there's no time too early to teach children about philanthropy. So we encourage the kids to dance for 3 hours, have a great time, but also reach out to family and friends. And this is really for kids from
so how do you make money on it?
So the kids are raising money based on the number of minutes they dance. So we're asking them to dance for 180 minutes, and they set up a fundraising page for themselves and create a video and send it to grandma and grandpa from, you know, all around the country. And the kids are doing phenomenal. We're breaking records so far this year.
Oh, that's great. So tell me the website one last time.
So it's tadatheater.com. You can follow the link to Dance-a-thon. You can look for Soul, or it's open to any kid between the age of 5 and 12. So you can sign your child up to hang out with her, too.
All right. One last time on the address.
Sure. Tadatheater.com. TadatheaTer.com.
Tadatheater.com. And then you go to the Dance-a-thon page, or you can look up Soul or any other child.
Correct.
Amy, good luck.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Soul's in the lead, by the way. I'm looking at the page right now.
Is she?
Yeah, she's raised the most money of any individual so far.
Oh, I got to help her out with that.
And it's probably because of this piano playing, yeah.
I got to post that video. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Yeah, I never played the piano. I just got a zero in music aptitude.
Uh-huh.
But I appreciate talent when I hear it.
You have to put this video up. It's hysterical.
I'm trying to figure out how to transfer it from my phone to the Facebook and Twitter.
It's a video from the point of view of the dog looking, and Soul. You see Soul's back playing the piano with Soul's teacher next to her, but you see the dog howling. So it's pretty funny.
866 Geraldo. Barry is on the line. Our neighbor in Edgewater. What's up, Barry?
Hi, Geraldo. How are you?
Good, man. What's up?
Good. I got two. I got the answer to your first question about Manson. And why he keeps coming back, because
okay.
He speaks his mind.
Start
he
there.
Built a great brand. Ba-dum-bum. Hello?
He built a great brand. That's
right.
Sick.
He speaks his mind, and he built a great brand.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's get to...
That is a ba-dum-bum.
I was watching a show this morning, and somebody had a great, great theory on what is going on. And you know what? The more I thought about it, the more I believe it. The debate the other night was very low-key compared to what had gone on previously, and that was due primarily to the air coming out of Trump and Carson. As we get deeper into strategy, and they're looking for more details on what they're going to do, Trump's a salesman. He knows when he's in over his head, and when he does that, he shuts his mouth, tries to listen, and tries to put together a strategy. I think going forward that the Republicans are going to wind up with Rubio. And if Rubio can get the cojones to stand up to a Ted Cruz or a Rand Paul when they scream at him, "You're not a conservative, you're not a conservative," he might actually win the nomination and could give Hillary a run for her money. But he's got to stop lying, and he's got to stand on his own 2 feet. That's my theory.
Well, I have heard, and I appreciate it, Barrett. Thank you. I've heard from many people that Rubio is actually the leader. I don't know how they discern that. I think that there is an arrogance among the political class to reject the notion that either of these two outsiders, Dr. Ben Carson or Donald Trump, will persist and will they endure? I think you can't sell either of them short, particularly not Trump. He hasn't even started selling, spending a dollar of his own money. He's self-funding. He rates like crazy. Nobody listening right now is of the opinion that the debate just held, the fourth debate, for goodness sake, would have attracted 13.5 million viewers if Donald Trump was not on the panel. They were tuning in to see the reality show, but the star of that reality show is Donald Trump. I mean, there is, as absolutely horrendous as I believe his immigration platform is, and he's doubled down on it now with this notion of a deportation force. And it's like a science fiction movie to me almost. I could see them wearing sci-fi kind of uniforms with helmets, high-style helmets and metallic uniforms and kind of clunking around and clunking in and, or you. I think it's a terrible, terrible notion. But I cannot in any way minimize the man's appeal. He is, you underrate Trump at your peril. I mean, what do you think, though? I mean, now you've seen it. Now you've heard all this. I haven't asked you, what's your latest Trumpian view?
You know, there was a part of me that thought it was just a summer infatuation with him because it was a slow news cycle and he sort of sucked up all the oxygen and did a great job at it. But now I sort of see that he holds on to this unless you get into the early part of next year, early January, before the Iowa caucus, New Hampshire primary, South Carolina, Nevada, and the polls show him losing to Hillary Clinton, right? If you have like across the board showing that he's just not getting the support, I think you're going to see Republicans say, I don't want to take a chance at getting Hillary Clinton, and they might find another candidate. But otherwise, I'm with you. I don't see who beats him up till then.
I don't see who beats him. And I think that Hillary Clinton, they say, the Democrats say, that Marco Rubio would be their most formidable opponent. Why? Because not only is he articulate and an excellent presenter, but he's also got that Latino thing, and he was the, now he keeps it on the down low, but he was one of the authors of one of the so-called Gang of Eight who came up with the Senate's immigration reform plan. I mean, he's rejected it now because he got burned by his hard right loyalists like the Tea Party folks. But he could resurrect that, and it's possible that he could have a broad appeal. And, you're going to see on the stage, you're going to see a 44-year-old guy against a 69-year-old woman. And we have a lot of discrimination based on age in this society. Let me get Rich in here. I haven't had to talk to Rich in a while in White Plains. What are you thinking about, buddy?
Hey, Geraldo. Allow me to explain to your listeners a liberal tactic of cherry-picking situations that appeal to people's emotions and misleading them with regard to deporting illegal aliens. We constantly hear, "What about the children?" as if every illegal has a child strapped to their back. The politicians can't even take the most basic first step of deporting multiple convicted illegal aliens, i.e. Kate's Law. So like Ted Cruz said, if it were journalists or politicians pouring into this country, you'd see our immigration laws enforced immediately.
Well, I hear you. It's obvious. I think that there are many, many, many children of the undocumented, many children who are undocumented. There are 4 million, as far as I know, that are going to be involved in the executive order to defer deportation that's now been prevented on its implementation by the federal courts, much to the joy and celebration of the right. I think that there are a lot of kids involved, and that's making this whole process a lot more icky than it might otherwise be. Oh, there's so much to talk about. We'll take it tomorrow. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. Look.